Welcome to November. We made it. In this new month, we welcome a new theme of abundance. What does it mean to be a people of abundance? On the eve of the upcoming election and coming up on the one-year anniversary of our presidential election last year, as we look back on a challenging and for some alarming year, there certainly seems to be an abundance of division, an abundance of conflict, an abundance of fear and unsafety. And yet the reason we keep showing up here, maybe the reason any religion exists at all, is that we do believe an abundance of love is possible, an abundance of hope, an abundance of security and well-being for all, an abundance of faith in that which made this world and everything in it. And so in that spirit, I invite you to hear these words from two great religious traditions. The first reading comes from the medieval Christian mystic, Catherine of Siena. We know nothing until we know everything. I have no object to defend, for all is of equal value to me. I cannot lose anything in this place of abundance I have found. If something my heart cherishes is taken away, I just say, Lord, what happened? And 100 more appear. Hello.
The second reading comes from the ancient Buddhist scripture, the Dhammapada. People threatened by fear go to many refuges, to mountains, forests, parks, trees, and shrines. None of these is a secure refuge. None is a supreme refuge. Not by going to such a refuge is one released from all suffering. But when someone going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha sees with right insight the Four Noble Truths, suffering, the arising of suffering, the overcoming of suffering, and the Eightfold Path leading to the ending of suffering, then this is the secure refuge. This is the supreme refuge. By going to such a refuge, one is released from all suffering.
So how are folks doing this week? Hanging in? It's hard to believe, isn't it, that we are just about at 1 year after the presidential election, and now on the eve of an important election for our state of Virginia. For many of us, it has been a challenging year, to say the least. Many of us have been watching and struggling to respond as our president demonizes immigrants and appoints climate change deniers to lead our EPA, as he equates white supremacists with racial justice activists one day, and on the next plays terrifying games of brinksmanship with North Korea. And we have been watching and making call after call to our legislators as the majority and Congress present bill after bill to take health insurance away from poor people so that the wealthiest people in our country can receive a tax cut. And can we just hit the pause button and say, this is a lot? It's a lot, right? And I don't know about you, but there are days when I read the latest headlines and I just want to stop and say, I cannot even. I can't even. And maybe for some of us, there are nights when we lie awake and feel scared about what may yet be coming. There may be moments when we do not quite know where to find hope. Moments when our faith in life itself gets a little shaky. And yet, as religious people, we are all about hope. We are all about faith, that despair is not the final word. That in the beautiful words of the psalm, weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. We are the inheritors of a tradition kept alive by generations of people who struggled as we do, who cried and laughed as we do, who endured and hoped and even thrived. And so we too hope. We too have faith in life. I think of Theodore Parker, Unitarian minister and anti-slavery activist of the pre-Civil War era. I believe the namesake of our own Parker House. Parker, whom legend has it, wrote his sermon sitting at his desk with a gun in the drawer in case he needed to defend the refugee slaves he helped to hide as part of the Underground Railroad. Parker, whom Dr. King quoted when he said famously, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice." Theodore Parker and Dr. King believed, as I believe that you do too, that over time we are growing towards justice, humanity altogether. Though, yes, it sometimes feels like one step forward, two steps back, and it is hard to live in a time of backlash such as this one. And yet, still, there are signs of hope all around us if we look for them. Are you finding signs of hope these days? I want to share three things that have made me hopeful personally, looking back over this year. The first one that comes to mind, the Women's March. Oh my, who was at the Women's March? So, I have never in all my life been to anything quite like that. Probably will never see anything like it again. The signs gave me hope. The one with Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia, excuse me, General Leia. The caption, "A woman's place is in the revolution." And I saw that and I felt hope. The hats, so awesome, right? And the crowds, unbelievable crowds, women of all ethnicities, all ages, flooding the streets. And men, bless those supportive men because we need you. Thank you. Thank you. People of all genders, all ages, all ethnicities. I think what touched my heart the most was seeing moms there with their little girls. That was amazing. And the kindness of people all day long. There were lines for everything, but it was okay. Everyone was in such good spirits, giving each other granola bars, bottles of water, what have you. And that was the day that I knew that we were going to be okay. Not that it would be easy, but that we were going to be okay. That was the first thing this year that really gave me hope. The second, it's kind of strange, but I think back to August. So Charlottesville, it's hard to find the words to describe that. The word awful is quite inadequate to describe the hate and violence that we witnessed. And yet, the reaction of ordinary people all over this country, all over the world, the immediate outcry from countless ordinary people who said, this is not right. This is not acceptable. This is wrong. And the clarity, the moral clarity that emerged immediately gives me great hope. We have a lot of work to do. We know this. We have a lot of work to do as we continue to try to make justice and equality a reality for everybody. But I do feel that arc bending a little bit more towards justice as we continue that slow work of transforming minds and hearts and institutions. So that's the second thing that gives me hope. The third thing that gives me hope, in fact, is you, Williamsburg Unitarian Universalists. I have watched you and talked with you. I have read your Facebook posts and joined in your committee meetings. And it is so moving to see how your hearts turn toward others, to see how you give so generously of your energy and your time and your money to make life a little better on this planet, to make life a little easier for your neighbors. I know that a lot of you have been working hard on this election, donating your time and your skills and your money to candidates who you believe represent your values. And I just want to affirm that. I am so grateful. I want to thank you. Your community thanks you. Next Sunday, you're also going to get a chance to hear more about a really important project that we will undertake together, our Winter Shelter Week, when we will be transforming this building into a shelter for our neighbors who are homeless. Now, this would be absolutely impossible without people like you who care and who are willing to not just care, but transform that care into action so that we have volunteers serving meals, hanging out with our guests, in some cases staying up all night so that others can sleep safely. We'll hear more about that next week, but for now, I just want to say this is just one of the reasons that you, dear folks, give me hope. To name all the reasons would make this sermon very, very long. And so even now, hope is welling up in my heart for this world that we love so much. I hope that is true for you too. And yet, I also find that there is a fourth thing that gives me hope, which is kind of paradoxical. It's kind of hard to put into words, but to me, it's the thing that underlies everything else. This fourth thing is an assurance rooted in the great religious traditions of the world, an assurance that I have leaned on often and especially this year, that no matter what is happening in this world, no matter what is happening in our own lives, no matter what events and emotions and thoughts are swirling around and within us, still, on a much deeper level, we are safe. We are okay. We are held in the most astonishing, beautiful web of support and presence and love. And it will always be that way. And it is, in fact, the reality, the real reality of everything and everyone, no matter how messed up, no matter how fragile and wounded this world may seem to be on the surface. And so, even if all that we have and all that we know and all that we cherish should be swept away, there is this deeper reality in which all is well and it cannot be otherwise. This is the teaching of so many of our great traditions. And I believe that the point, the ultimate point of religion, is to give us paths and tools to help us find our way back to that deeper reality from which we have emerged and which we have never really left. One of the things I love most about our Unitarian Universalist tradition is that it gives us so much freedom to look for those particular spiritual paths and tools that will help us on our way. And as we go, maybe each one of us will be drawn to slightly different paths, different teachings, and it's okay because we are all trying to get back to that same place, and we recognize the same spirit working in those different paths. I'll share just a couple of teachings that have helped me in particular. I invite you to listen again to the poignant words of the Dhammapada, the foundational scripture of Buddhism. People threatened by fear go to many refuges, to mountains, forests, parks, trees, and shrines. None of these is a secure refuge. Now, when I first read this, I thought, whoa, that's really depressing. And yet, it grabbed me. It held my attention. And as I sat with that, I began to feel an odd sort of relief. Relief because here was this thousands of years old voice speaking the truth about life. The truth that there are no guarantees. There is no absolute refuge on this earth. Bad things can happen anywhere at any time. And yet that voice continues. It doesn't stop there, but it continues to say there is a refuge, an absolute and completely secure refuge, which is possible here and now in this life. It's just not what you think. The refuge is found in the transformation of your mind. And the teaching continues, through the gradual process of transformation, through spiritual practice, which is at the heart of the Buddhist tradition, through learning to observe your mind, learning to observe your emotions, discovering that you can be with your thoughts and emotions without being overcome by them, learning to develop a peace and a spaciousness within yourself, which is not contingent on anything that is happening in the world, that is safety. And the scripture continues, by going to such a refuge, one is released from all suffering. For me, as for countless others in so many different times and places, that message was electrifying. Years later, I stumbled onto another path that for me really served to deepen the message of the Buddha that it is possible to experience peace and safety no matter what. I had been hearing about the medieval Christian mystics, hermits, monastics, visionaries who talked with the God I was not sure I believed in. They had visions of love, fire, transformation, unspeakable beauty, and I found that I wanted to taste what they had tasted. People like Catherine of Siena, who was able to say with a full heart, I cannot lose anything in this place of abundance I have found. People like St. John of the Cross, who taught us that even in our times of spiritual desert and darkness, even then, there is a life-giving spirit at work in us. And people like Julian of Norwich, who said so famously, all will be well. It would be so easy to write off those words of Julian as the worst sort of Pollyanna-ishness, like, oh, whatever, it's all good, you know, but it's not that. It's not that at all, because what we need to understand is that those words came out of a deep spiritual struggle. Julian lived in England in the 14th century, and the world she knew was in crisis her whole life long. She lived her entire life in wartime. Her entire life, as the Hundred Years' War dragged on, she lived through multiple epidemics of plague. She knew that much in her world was not well at all. And yet those words, "all will be well," they came to her in a vision. She was 30 years old, and she was extremely sick. She believed that she was about to die. And at the crisis of her illness, she had a series of visions of Jesus talking to her. She did recover, and she wrote down her visions in her book, The Revelations of Divine Love, which, by the way, is the earliest surviving book written by a woman in English. Jillian tells us that in her vision, she was talking with Jesus, and she was asking him, really desperate to know, why is there sin? Why is everything such a mess? I don't understand. And in her vision, Jesus responds, "It is true. It is true that sin is the cause of all this pain, but still, all shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well." Those words have sunk deep into my spirit, not as some kind of cheap assurance that everything's going to be fine, don't worry, but as a mystery that sings in my heart, just as the Buddha's promise of refuge has comforted my spirit. These are challenging days we're living in. There's no denying. These are challenging days. We do what we can to make things better here and now, and that will always be vitally important. But I also wish for you an abiding, abundant faith in that deeper reality in which all is well, and it cannot be otherwise.